Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, but it's my favorite episode. It's a Culinary Atlanta episode. How are you doing, Katie?
Doing great, Lee. How about you?
I got a terrible cough. So if I cough, just do something to hide that.
Okay, okay? I will do my best.
Well, as usual, not every week, but pretty much every week lately, it seems we got the hand-picked Atlanta folks here. Welcome, John.
What up? It's good to be back.
So for the two people who don't know about hand-picked Atlanta, I want to give them a quick snapshot of what you're up to.
Handpicked Atlanta is a company that is started and founded in Atlanta. We do the best of what, you know, to eat and where to go in Atlanta. One of the things that we try to give to our audience is really unique experience. So if you go to handpickedatlanta.com, you can see a really nice curation of like what Atlanta has going on right now that's the coolest.
And then you're always looking for kind of the, I don't want to say weird, but sometimes it's weird, different, maybe not the run-of-the-mill stuff with the largest ad budgets. These are the people that are out there battling, scraping the grinders of the world.
Yeah, totally. A really good example is not actually food, but we just started a new feature on our site with Lucky Axe. They're a company off of Edgewood or Auburn Avenue, actually. And you can go and, with some friends, throw axes against a wall. And yeah. I know that sounds like really strange, like you're saying, and kind of maybe like boring, but it's actually a lot of fun. And we went as a company, you know, the whole office went about a week or so ago, and it was a ton of fun.
Cool. And then who'd you bring with you today?
We brought Hollis from Montane Water. He shares an office in our building downtown at the Switchyards Downtown Club. And I've known him for a few months now. We don't have any like official partnership with him on paper between Handpicked Atlanta and Montane, but he's just a really great guy that has a wonderful product.
All right, Hollis, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Lee.
Tell us a little bit about Montane. How are you serving folks?
Yeah, Montane sparkling spring water is sourced from a spring on my family's land here in Georgia. We've been in production about 311 days.
311, just give or take?
Just give or take 12 hours, 311 days.
Do you have a counter?
I do.
So now, it's spring water, it's bubbling up your family's property somewhere. Is that what happened?
Yes.
That's how it started?
It's been in my family almost 100 years for four generations, and it produces 500 gallons a minute of some of the purest water in North America, and it's right here in Georgia.
So now, when you first found it, were you like, oh, great, there's a spring? Or were you like, oh, great, there's a spring. Now what do we do with all this water?
No, it's been known about for hundreds, if not thousands of years. People built communities around it. It's been a great source of water for a long time. So it's a
useful thing.
Absolutely.
And then at one point, did you start saying, hey, let's throw it in a can?
Well, I was making healthier drinking decisions. I was moving away from soda. And
oh, that's what you're talking about. Sorry.
I was drinking a lot of sparkling water myself. And I was in a corporate environment not too far from here in the cubicle. And looking at the folks around me and the trajectory, I decided that I wanted to do something entrepreneurial and not spend the rest of my life there. So at the same time, my family has this amazing resource and a big fan of sparkling water. And I think drinking LaCroix and Perrier and all those other options and said, hey, I think I can do this better. So I took the leap and ultimately got to where I am now.
So now what was happening before you were canning it? Where was the water going? Just back in the ground?
Yep. Well, if we don't use it, it flows off into the Chattahoochee River. But the other part of the story is my grandfather began bottling it, just conventional bottled water, about 16 years ago. My dad runs that business now. And I wanted to do something related But the way I explain it is I love my dad. We get along great and I want to keep it that way. So I set this up as a distinct product line with a distinct brand and distinct
business. Your family was okay? They're going to let Hollis go and do that.
They're very, very supportive.
And then so you created the brand and you started playing around with different flavors. Is that what happened?
Exactly. The brand development and product development, flavor development began about 20 months ago at this point. And it took about 8 months to get from the, you know, go to production. And right now we've got two flavors, got the cucumber lime and lemon honeysuckle. And we have one unflavored, just conventional sparkling water.
Right.
And we've been very humbled by all the enthusiasm we've received from the culinary community. People are very fanatical about sparkling water. Beverages, people seem to associate with their identity more than foods. You know, you see the Monster Energy stickers on the back of a pickup truck or somebody who always has a Diet Coke in their hand. It's whatever it may be, people seem to associate beverages with their identity.
So now, what was it like coming up with the brand? Like, how did you come about naming it? Like, how did that come about?
Well, I began by making a big list of potential names.
So what were some of the names that didn't make the cut?
The one name that I really liked, it was Jewel with two L's. It's my grandfather's middle name.
That's a good one.
It's a very storybook name.
Yeah, Georgia's Jewel. I already had all the taglines lined up. The trademark attorney told me that it's
a bridge too far.
Yeah, it'd be risky. There was some potential conflicts.
Right.
And so they sent me back to the drawing board. And I had to go through that a few times. And Montane, I made a list of all the ecological terms, the Latin names for the plants and animals around the spring, and made a big list, went through all the trademark conflict searches, and Montane ended up being the one that we liked the most. It means mountainous. There's Montane longleaf pine habitat surrounding the spring.
And then to me, I hear Montana, and then I think of like kind of clean living and everything's healthy and wide open spaces.
Yeah, it just means mountainous.
Right.
It's like Montana with an E.
Right. I think that's a great name. I think you did a great job. Now, what about the design part about that? How'd you do that?
Yeah, the design process, we wanted to convey purity and faceted and timelessness, kind of gem-like qualities. So that's how we got the hexagon gem pattern.
And you're talking about for the can.
On the can.
On the can, yep.
And it looks a little like honeycomb-ish. Is that on purpose?
Yeah, it does
look
a bit honeycomb.
Or is that just the honeysuckle?
That's all of them kind of have the hexagon pattern that, you know, we came up with this gem icon and just multiplied it. Mm-hmm. And then we also included some retro elements. We wanted it to convey a sense of place. So we talked about where it's from here in Georgia. And we have two copy paragraphs that summarize some of the unique selling propositions of our product.
And that actually brings up a really good point. I remember a little while ago, you were saying when you first started the company, you had these ideas of what was going to be the biggest draw. And that's changed since like going around to these Atlanta accounts that you're setting up. So, do you mind telling everybody like what you thought was going to be the biggest selling point and what it wound up actually being?
Yes. So in the beginning, I wanted to emphasize the unique properties of the spring water. It gets kind of technical, but it's really nothing like it in the world. It flows from quartzite bedrock, and most springs are sedimentary rock like limestone or dolomite. Quartzite it never erodes. It's extremely hard surface, and as a result, we have very, very pure water. It's classified as ultra pure spring water.
So this spring is like a geological wonderland.
It is. It's truly, I could go on for hours about it. And that's a big challenge in the branding is editing down the storytelling and the messaging to what's going to resonate. And in the first iteration of the branding and packaging, we do dive into that pretty, you know, on a medium abbreviated level. But we learned that it's too technical and people care more that it's a local product and a pure product and not necessarily all the amazing technical aspects.
The geology behind it.
So you thought it was going to be like a health drink and, and it's really like a really nice sparkling local beverage.
Yep. And that, and that it's refreshing and we have great flavors. Those are the more appealing USPs.
Now the quartzite, are there other brands that are filtered through that?
Not that we're aware of.
Wow. So that's like the only one in the world? It could be? Wow.
It could be.
That we know of at this
time.
That
we know. But people are resonating with the brand and the flavor more than that, than the geology behind it.
I think it's the local appeal that wound up, right? Like,
yes, the local appeal. The other thing we do that's unique, consumers prefer sparkling water in a can. That's what sells the most. There's glass, there's PET, and those brands do okay with that. But what people are drinking a lot of is canned sparkling water, and LaCroix is the biggest example of that. And so we want it to be in the can, and we're the only one putting spring water into our sparkling water. All the other canned sparkling waters are municipally sourced.
So they're just like reverse osmosis kind of tap water?
They're filtered tap water. And so we wanted to make sure that we communicated that to our consumers that, hey, we're the only one actually putting spring water. Everybody else is just tap.
Now, you mentioned the importance of restaurants. Are restaurants open to kind of switching to a local, maybe a smaller brand than they're used to dealing with?
They are. It's a lot of our success has been with restaurants, and it's the chefs and the beverage managers who appreciate local products, and it's somebody in their community who's making this. And a lot of our success has been in those channels, and it's great exposure because we get it introduced to people who otherwise might not see it or try it.
Now, how do you get the word out to the restaurant owners? You're just bringing sampling opportunities everywhere?
Media is very helpful, getting press. And apart from that, it's knocking on doors, introducing it to folks. Fortunately, it's inexpensive enough that I can go and leave samples and leave some information. If I can meet with the person and talk to them myself, that's even better. But, you know, a higher value product like a expensive bottle of wine.
Right,
or liquor,
it's harder to...
you can't just go and leave a bottle at every potential account.
You do have, for being such a new company and still, I'm imagining, needing to like scale your production a lot more before you can become really competitive. Your price point is amazing. I don't know if that helps, but I eat out a lot, probably more than I should. And I see it everywhere. And it's one of those things like when you buy a new car and you see the car everywhere. Like I met Hollis and knew about Montane. And then everywhere I look, Montane, it's even at Publix's now.
Really? So, yeah, you got into Publix?
Yeah. Yep.
That was okay. I said that.
We're in about 12 Publix stores, mostly inside the perimeter, a few on the north end. And we're still a relatively new item, and we're trying to demonstrate that we're going to have velocity and sales, and then use that to argue for more stores.
Mm-hmm. So now, what has been the most rewarding part of this adventure for you? Because you said you worked in a kind of a normal corporate job, and this is very entrepreneurial.
Well, I love getting out, telling the story to people, having them try it. And I also like that it's consistent with my values of conservation that was taught to me by my parents and taught to them by their parents and generations back, that by offering a healthy product, I'm not selling something that's going to hurt anybody's health.
Right.
It's quite the opposite. And also that the money that we make goes back into our conservation efforts.
Because so, you do like some of the proceeds go back to the land and maintaining it and stuff?
The Yeah, we don't dive into a whole lot of those details, but we have put the land and the surrounding 1,000 acres into a conservation easement with the state of Georgia. Mm-hmm. So that area will be protected in perpetuity. And we're very proud to have accomplished that. The state of Georgia is a great partner to do that. The Forestry Commission recognized how unique this area was, that it needed to be conserved.
And that's where the spring is?
That's where the spring is, yep. So that's one thing we're very proud to have accomplished.
So now, the fact that it's not like this ginormous spring where it's like gazillion gallons, is there some limit to the amount of cans that you can produce?
500 gallons a minute is...
Is that a lot?
It adds up to a lot.
Is there, it?
It would be very difficult for us to exceed the production of the spring.
Uh-huh. So that'll hold you for a while.
Absolutely.
And then do you want to be everywhere? Like you want to be an international brand or you want to be a regional brand?
Our focus right now is to develop deep brand resonance here in the state of Georgia, figure out how to activate a market and get people excited about it. And then we'll replicate that in other markets. Our next steps are going to be Florida and South Carolina, but right now we're focused on Georgia.
And then the way you're doing it is through restaurants. That's you're trying to get influencers in the food world to kind of believe in it and to talk about it and to have it at their restaurant.
That's a very big part of it.
And then at some point, what do you see the evolution? Just be everywhere?
Well, the next steps will be selling 8-packs in the grocery stores, selling singles in a coffee or deli or restaurant channel. It takes a lot to add up to a case and make much money.
Right.
It's great exposure, great brand building. And I love that part of it. But to scale up, we need to sell the multi-packs in the grocery store.
So right now it's just single cans you can buy?
No, we do sell a lot of 8-packs as well. But the restaurant channel, they're just selling singles.
Right.
And so the getting more placements in the grocery stores, getting wider placements, that's where we need to be.
And then that's just done. You got to have the grocery store pilot it. Is that normally how it works?
Well, it takes time
that can get really competitive, right? For the like end aisle displays and stuff like that.
Because there's some large beverage companies you might not know about.
Like bullies, basically.
It's very competitive. Fortunately, many grocery stores do value local products and are willing to work with you. Mm-hmm. It's just takes time. You have to prove that you're serious, that people like the product, and that you're not going anywhere. There's a lot of people with beverage and food dreams, and they're not in business a year or two later. So showing that you're dedicated and hardworking and that people like what you have to offer is a part of it. And then it just kind of takes time.
And delivering consistently probably is what sets you apart. Because like you said, so many people start like a beverage company or like I'm making bitters for cocktails, whatever. And they have a great idea, great product, great branding, but then aren't very business minded. So they don't deliver when they actually get orders from these big boxes.
If you miss a PO, they're not going to send a second one.
Yeah. Game over.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, they're probably, if you go to a festival, there's somebody that's making some quirky craft something or other, right? And that's kind of maybe hurts the ones that are more substantial that can handle an account at a large grocery store.
Yep. Scalability on the production end is not an issue. We have the opposite issue.
He's saying bring it.
Yeah, exactly.
We make it by the truckload.
And then, you could handle it if a Whole Foods or a Sprouts or one of these larger grocery chains wanted to partner with you or offer your beverage, you can handle the volume for that.
Absolutely.
And then the way you do that is you got to meet the person that's going to looking for the local. And then you get in the door that way and they test you in a couple stores.
There's a few routes to getting planogrammed. So getting a placement on the shelf. There's the conventional category review process that typically takes place once a year and is either system-wide or regional. But they also have local food programs and can make decisions on a more regional scale. Mm-hmm. And so there's multiple ways to get into the grocery store.
Are there any big box companies or distributors maybe that you wouldn't have thought would be really supportive of you, but have shown, you know, more time or interest than you were expecting? Because, like, I kind of think about, like, you know, if you aren't, like, owned by Coca-Cola, like, it's probably really hard to even get a meeting with some of these people. So I didn't know if there was one that's like, you know, we actually are interested.
What about liquor stores?
The liquor stores do reasonably well. Total Wine has brought us into all of their Georgia locations, and they're a high volume operation. They sell a lot of all types of beverages.
And convenience stores?
Convenience stores, they're hit or miss. You really need the right crowd coming into a convenience store for a sparkling water to make sense.
Mm-hmm. So what are you doing? You're going out there and just meeting all these grocery... That's the place where you can make the biggest bang for your buck in terms of time and leverage, right?
Well, you can't focus all on one. It has to be balanced. So you have to work on the brand building, which is restaurant, deli, coffee type accounts. And then you also need to balance that with paying the bills and and getting grocery store placements. So it's you can't just do one or the other. You have to do both.
How many people are on your team right now?
We're working on hiring our fourth person, but it's just part-time folks helping out right now.
So you're the main guy?
Yep. I'm the Montana man.
What kind of positions do you have? Though, I mean, I know it's part-time, but like, what were some of the first types of position that you needed to hire and have help with?
The first hire that outside of a project basis was a person to help with making sales calls and doing in-store demos. And she's been a very great help and still working for us. For the design and branding, that's typically project-based work. So I've had some great help in those departments as well. And fortunately, we get to the end point and get to go back to working on selling and growing.
Yeah.
So now you're out there evangelizing for the product and you're trying to get the word out as best you can. Right now, I think we can say that Montane is the official beverage choice for this episode of Culinary Atlanta.
Absolutely.
So
I have a little office refrigerator and there's literally three shelves dedicated. I buy it by the case. Yeah. And I was even telling him earlier before we started the interview, even my family has started texting me, you know, hey, can we get another case of Montane? And I don't know what it is about it, but people really, really do love it.
Right. How did you come up with the flavor choice? Like, how did you choose the lemon, the Meyer lemon honeysuckle and the cucumber lime? See that? That was a live action shot.
I began with, again, brainstorming. I came up with a list of, I believe we had 15 potential flavor combinations. And through paneling with friends and family and at the coffee shop, we narrowed it down to a few finalists, and a few rounds of paneling got us even tighter. And I wanted flavors that could be found in the South. Nothing exotic like pamplemousse. I wanted
no papaya.
I wanted things that people are familiar with. And personally, I have nostalgia for honeysuckle. When I was a kid, my brothers and I would go pick it off the fence in our backyard and play with the honeysuckle. And that appealing to nostalgia, beverages are, you know, very linked to emotion, and that was one reason for it. It also just tastes great. And the same with the cucumber lime. It stood out as one of the strongest flavors by far. So
it's the only flavor I buy. Yeah, I really love it. So I actually get to sit in on his focus group sometimes. The coffee shop he's talking about is in our office. And like, what actually is happening with that? I know you collect all of our answers about what we liked and what we don't like, but what do you do with that focus group information? Like, how do you make a decision past just hearing us talk about it?
Well, I give all the participants a grading rubric, if you will, mm-hmm. and have a rating system for aroma, flavor, carbonation. Then they can add any other comments they like. And then I go compile it all into a spreadsheet and see numerically what stands out. Ultimately, it comes down to what I
think. What you want. It's about Hollis, I think, at the bottom of.
Well, you have to believe in it and have to believe that you're making the right choice. But it's often quite tough. The most recent round, the numerical data came out. It was pretty balanced, mm-hmm. and I had to make a call, and I just went with what I thought would be the best.
Now, what about the level of carbonation? Because it isn't super carbonated. I've had some of these that were they're too carbonated.
It almost burns your throat or something. Yeah,
we're on the higher end of the carbonation spectrum. We're big on bubbles.
Does the spring quartz, what does that help make it softer somehow?
The water comes out of the ground still. We add the carbonation, but because the very low mineral profile in the water, the quartzite, you know, as I mentioned, it produces extremely pure water. The minerals give you a heavier mouthfeel. So without that, I believe when we carbonate it, it gives extra pop and an extra refreshing beverage.
Well, it's like,
I think it's more mellow. I don't think it's like,
well, I think that's, like, it's very like, so water is hard or soft, right?
That
in a general sense,
I believe that,
that's how I understand it as Fiji advertises it. I'm not an expert, by the way. I'm just reading the side of a bottle.
I'm not too sure about that. Although we do like to emphasize that we have low carbon miles and don't have to come from
an island far away. Right.
Yeah, there's perfectly good water.
And I could be completely making this up, but I was under the impression that like general, like non-scientific terms, when we drink water, like as consumers, it can be hard or soft. I'm not sure what makes water hard or soft. I think it's mineral content. And I just didn't know if maybe the fact that there's so little mineral content in this, if it does seem like a smoother than like some of the other stuff I have.
Yeah. I mean, that's a way when I'm drinking them right now, the cucumber lime, and it's very smooth. I don't want to say it's a still beverage because it's definitely carbonated, but it's not. I've had carbonated where it's just to me too kind of almost carbonated and bitter almost, where this is very smooth. That's
but anyways, it's a good balance of bubbles.
Yeah. I think you're on the right track there because I've had spring water where I'm like, I'm not a big fan of spring water. And maybe it was just that it was just not great spring water. So you guys are definitely doing something right. This sparkling spring water Montane. And right now you said you can get them at Publix, some 12 Publixes in Atlanta, and then at the finest restaurants in town, according to John.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We have about 170 accounts in the state of Georgia, and there's a store locator on our website, mm-hmm. which is a good resource to go check out. It's montanespring.com.
And can you order them like online and get it shipped, or we're not there yet?
No, we don't do any e-commerce. It's very expensive to ship water. Right. It would be three times as much for the shipping
just
as
for the
product.
Shipping.
Right.
But you can go to these stores and they are available for 8-packs at Publix right now?
Yep. Yeah. And any Publix can special order it. It's mm-hmm. in their special item request system. And any Publix in the country can go in and special request it for you, and they'll be happy to do that.
And here in Atlanta, just anecdotally, my favorite restaurant that works with Montane is Wrecking Bar. It's a like the level that they go through on priding themselves, knowing where their ingredients and like everything comes from. They just do really cool stuff with his sparkling water and their bar program.
Now I know you're going to know this, but what drink is the best drink?
Personally, the thing I've been liking, what we've been doing at the office on Friday afternoons, is we mix the cucumber lime with Old Fourth Ward's vodka, and it like makes the vodka taste disappear. I don't even like vodka. I won't drink it, but it somehow like blends perfectly together. If you put some ice in that, it's just like it's two things that you're pouring in a cup. It's not that fancy, but it works really well.
Did you know that, Hollis?
I may have participated in that one time.
You were part of that focus group.
The other interesting thing, I know you had ASW on recently.
Right. Yeah.
They are big fans and a great customer, and they appreciate the low mineral content. If you have a higher mineral content in the sparkling
water,
it
taints the whiskey somehow.
It wrecks the whiskey. So that was one of the first questions. Few people in the wild ask me about the mineral content right off the bat. And their master distiller came out.
That was the first thing.
That was the first question he had.
And you all remember this from last episode, but they're super particular at ASW. I mean, they're like OCD scientists about everything they work with.
So that's great. So that's montanespring.com, M-O-N-T-A-N-E spring.com.
That's correct.
And you can go and find a place near you that has the coolest, what is it? The sparkling spring water. Mm-hmm. Georgia grown.
Georgia grown.
Are you the only Georgia grown sparkling spring water?
I am.
Wait, you have like a laundry list of like, I'm the only spring water that's sparkling.
Well,
I'm
the only quartzite for sure in the planet.
It's a pretty big claim.
Well, John, anything else going on at Handpicked ATL? Any events coming up?
I wasn't kidding earlier. That axe throwing thing is more fun than you would think. So check that out. We have a bunch of stuff that's about to pop up on the site, though, sometime in the next week or so. There's a restaurant that I really love. Maybe we'll bring him on the show sometime. His name is Chuck, and he has a new restaurant called Jim Adams Farm and Table, just opened up on the west side. And we were just doing a photo shoot with him this morning, and he does like a very, very authentic farm, local market, and you can get sandwiches and salads and stuff made from those market goods as well, type experience. And he has a really neat space too. So we're excited about him and also the axes.
Who doesn't love an axe? So that's handpickedatl.com.
Yep, handpickedatl.com. I'm sorry, handpickedatlanta, all spelled out, .com. And then our Instagram handle is handpickedatl. And you can also catch us on Twitter at handpickedatl.
Good stuff. Well, thank you once again for making this show happen and bringing great guests like Hollis.
Thank you.
Sparkling spring water. And this is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio's Culinary Atlanta, brought to you by Handpicked ATL and Montane. Crisp and clean.